This is an unusual Lightly on the Ground episode in several ways. My guest is Zakiatou Walet Halatine, and she speaks with us over the internet from Mauritania, where she has lived as a refugee since much of her town, including her home and business, were burned on February 1st, 2012. The audio quality is inconsistent, but what she says is well worth listening closely. She tells us how to build a sustainable business and what it is like to be barred from returning to her homeland, and the difference between the way men and women conceive of starting a micro-enterprise. In late September 2013, Dr. Halatine was scheduled to speak at a conference on women, war, and peace at Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia. Co-sponsors include the Richmond Peace Education Center, Virginia Friends of Mali, and the Richmond Sister Cities Commission, along with many departments and agencies of Virginia Commonwealth University and Richmond Independent Radio. After being denied travel to the U.S. by the consul in Mauritania, Zakiatou was invited along with her husband to the consulate where their multi-year visas were canceled.
Okay, my name is Zakiatou Walet Halatine. I am actually in Nouakchott, Mauritania.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing in Mauritania?
I am a refugee since 2012. I am a refugee because the 1st of February of last year, my house was burned with many people from the town where we were living. So we had to flee away from our home business. I left my business, I left my house, my kids' house, and everything was stolen. Some of them were burned.
What kind of work do you do?
Well, actually, I am an engineer, but I have been working with the government of Mali. He has a civil servant of the Malian state, mm-hmm. our country. And then I was with UNDP. Before that, I was working with USAID in Bamako. This was in early 82, and then I went as an international civil servant with UNIDO in Vienna.
And that's a United Nations organization?
Yes, it's about development, especially it's related to industrial development all over the world. It's called UNIDO.
Yes. The radio show that I do is about small businesses and sustainability. And one thing I learned about you when I was doing research is that you have concentrated on micro enterprises, on small businesses.
Yes, that's right. For the last 12 years, I was concentrating on developing the micro enterprise in Mali. And for that, I had to do, before all, a small kind of applied research in order to know how to deal and how to assist the micro entrepreneurs in the context of Mali, taking into account all the possibility created by the state and also all the lack within the state and within the private sector dealing with small entrepreneurs like banks and so-called microcredit. Because in Mali, the micro entrepreneurs want to develop a business for their own. At the beginning of the business, they don't think that they should ask for partners, or they should ask for credit in the early beginning of their business. So how to come from that to a sustainable business? This is the main reason for what I had to go first to do this research and to know really how to assist them. Because when you are a micro entrepreneur, you are different from a big entrepreneur, even a middle one. Mm-hmm. You have the needs are different, and the way you do the business also is different. So, and unfortunately, in Africa, there are no studies and no concept developed towards such need of micro entrepreneurs. In the 80 and 90, he just started talking about how to assist the micro entrepreneurs. And this is why I had to do this work for my own, in with the idea to assist the micro entrepreneurs. Many, many handcraft services, all kind of enterprises. There are many opportunities in our country, Mali, to develop small business, because we have the youth is the youth in terms of number is more important than all of the ages. So you have many people who can work in this sector if they are given opportunity to do so, mm-hmm. and if they are well assisted.
And the assistance you provide is by way of finding partners and by way of finding funding for people who have ideas that you can help them to develop.
Actually, it's even more than that, because we have to develop first to see the idea, their idea, see if it's possible to develop it in Mali, see if there are all conditions in order that they do not fail while creating their own enterprise or developing it. And then we had to do this real study, even if it's macro enterprise, it's useful to do a small study to see how it will be and if all the conditions do exist. This is the first thing we do. And after that, we have to assess the capacity of the entrepreneur itself and to see if what he's saying is really its need. Because sometimes when they have an idea, it's just because they heard it or they think the donors will give them money to finance this and not the other activity that they really want to do. So you have to assess the capacity and the real need mm-hmm. of the entrepreneur and of also the market, if there is any potential market for the what he is going to produce or the service he is going to deliver. Mm-hmm. So this is very important, because sometimes people think, okay, it's micro enterprise, often it's in the informal sector, so they don't pay attention to them. Because I discovered while working with them that it's very potential activity, because sometimes they grow very fast uh-huh. and very quick. For example, they can start with 1 million CFA, and next year they have already a turnover of 50 million or 100 million, you see. Because they have all conditions. And also the other thing is to assist them with the administrative challenges, because they have many, in the administration you have laws, you have many things which they can use. But often they are illiterate and they don't know where to go and with whom to speak and what to ask for. Mm-hmm. And this is also a very important step, by which they have to go and for which they need a permanent assistance.
You broke up there. You said for which you need to...
For which you need assistance, for which they need assistance. Uh-huh. They need to be assisted in that way. Let us say they can get all what the law gives them, what's said in the law, to develop their enterprise. Often they do not have access to it because they just ignore it. They don't know that it exists.
Right. It sounds like you bring a scientific method to helping people develop businesses.
Yes, because yes. I am personally a scientific person, so
right.
I cannot go without...
Yeah, that's wonderful, because it gives you a method to fall back on to test whether or not something's working as you go through the process of helping develop it.
Yeah. Exactly. It's different from just doing credit or just writing a feasibility study or market study. It's kind of more responsibility towards the entrepreneur itself and towards our work, what we are doing. Because often for this kind of entrepreneurs, they can find, for example, a small credit without assistance, mm-hmm. or they can find assistance with NGOs or donors without credit. So in order to make them to combine all this, and if you have to combine it, so you have to know the environment, the business environment, you have to know the laws, you have to know the existing donors, where you can go to ask for assistance for the entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And sometimes also they need some expertise. For example, if we had an entrepreneur doing he was just gathering all this plastic from the town and making bricks from it.
Oh, so taking plastic and recycling it into bricks.
Yes, recycling the plastic. Uh-huh. And for that, we were in fact looking for a sustainable method to do it, and also a method which is not bad for the health of the entrepreneur itself and for the people who are working with them. Uh-huh. So we have to think about special, a small special technology. So, and that means just what I wanted to and the line, but although they are small, they need what a big enterprise needs. They need exactly the same type of services, like access to credit, access to training, market study, feasibility study, access to any advantages the law can give them, and also to know very well the fiscality. No, it's not the word. The taxes, how, because it's important. It can play against them if they do not correctly the tax.
Right.
So you have to train them and inform them well on how they can pay the taxes correctly, so it cannot later on influence on their work.
Yeah, that's certainly true everywhere. Could you tell us a story? Tell us a story of some entrepreneur who came to you with maybe an agricultural or a gardening or a food production idea, and how the process went for them, and.
For agricultural, I had many cases, for example, transformation of fruits, transformation of vegetables, honey production, and plantation of trees, so they can be used for cooking later on.
You have a honey one with bees?
Yes.
Tell us that story, please.
First of all, it was a man who came to me. Uh-huh. He knows a lot about bees, about how to produce honey, etc. And he was really interested. But he was interested in, telling me in a scientific way. Uh-huh. And when we started discussing with him, I discovered that his wife was working in his small shop. So she was the one selling the honey. So I started discussing with her. And finally, I find that the man was like the woman was more adapted to be a real entrepreneur than the man who come to us. And at the end, it's his wife who is actually running the business, because she was more open and she really had a business profile. And from a small enterprise, actually, they are also producing soap, honey, and many other things coming from honey production. And also they built a kind of cooperative with honey producers, villages. And I find her, she is really, she became a very good entrepreneur when the husband was not thinking that she was able to do so. And in fact, the business was not going on very well at that time because he was too busy. He was doing too much things and he did not concentrate on the production and on the selling of the honey. Mm-hmm. So actually when the wife took it over, she dedicated herself exclusively to that, and she was doing it in a wonderful manner. And for that, we assisted them. We gave him a small credit. I don't remember even, it was, I think, $1.5 million, CFA.
And how does that translate into dollars?
$1.5 million. It's almost, $2,050.
So for a little over $2,000, they got this business up and running.
Yes.
And
it's, yes.
Now they're selling honey,
yes,
and
exactly.
Byproducts of honey.
Yes, exactly. By doing soap, by doing all kind of, and also some cosmetic products.
Mm-hmm.
There are many, many. Oh, it was really, really wonderful. And I really love all of them. They are very talented people.
Tell me, please, your experience with women entrepreneurs.
I think, well, all both men and women can be successful in business, but they do it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And often, women stick to what she is doing. If she decided to do it, she will do it. She will develop it. She will go on. Where the man will think about all different things because he wants to get money very quickly and big money. This is what I observed. Maybe it's not true, but for example, they are in a hurry to get money often, where the woman can go slowly by his own.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I cannot say they are more responsible, but they are more close to what they are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Where the man will sometimes ask, need recognition for what he's doing. He will try to, you see, to talk to many people and show what he's doing. And while doing this, he's losing time. Also, each of them has its own sector. Its own sector, its own type of business.
Mm-hmm.
There are some businesses where you have more men than women, and mm-hmm. there are more others where you have more women than men. It depends. For example, for agriculture, like rice production, plantation, we had men and women, but when it comes to transformation, often it's women. Transformation of products, it's often women who is doing it.
And when you say transformation of products, do you mean taking a product and adding value to it, like taking honey and making soap, or?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Or, for example, taking fruits and transforming it in another product.
Okay.
Like conserve, commonly conserve.
You mean like preserves, like making jam, making preserves out of fruit?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Each of them has its own, I don't say dedicated sector, but preference.
Right. Well, it sounds to me like this work is very useful and helps to develop opportunities for people to have their own businesses and to flourish in their own country. And if you think of peace in terms of being not just an absence of war, but in a sense of having enough and of having a life where you can thrive, then it sounds to me like the work that you're doing is really promoting peace and economic justice. But I know that you were invited to come to the United States for the conference on women, war, and peace. Mm-hmm. And you were barred from coming into the country. Can you tell me something about that?
Yes, for your first part of your question, I think it's very important because often when you see the origin of the wars, it comes because the poverty is not, people are very poor. This is why often it comes. Not always, but in generality, it is explained by a very, very big poverty, what especially in Sahel, Mali, and other Sahelian countries. And what we see also that it's often young people. So it's clear that it helps to gain revenues. It helps to make the young people working. And this is a very important factor for peace.
Right.
Regarding our travel to the U.S., well, we were invited and I had a multi-year visa, which was still valid. It is valid until 2017.
Uh-huh.
And my husband also had a new multi-year visa. And actually, I really don't know what's happened. It's very sad.
Mm.
It's really, really sad for us, but we couldn't make it. We ask, of course, to be clarified on what's happened because it's our right to know and we want to know because I don't feel I have been made anything against anyone or whoever. So it's my right to know what's happened.
Well, I know that there are people on this side of the ocean who are trying to find out also. And I hope that I do get to meet you someday. But I'm so glad that you were able to speak with us over the computer.
Thank you. I'm glad to.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
So you're in Mauritania now. When are you going? Are you going back to Mali soon?
Actually, it's very, very, I don't know, because when you read the Malian press, you see people saying all sort of horrible things. When I think about Mali, I am born in Mali. My parents were born there. It's my country. I love it. I know everything in the country. I have many, many friends, you see. But I can't just understand the situation. When we came, when we flew away, when our house and business was burned, of course, I had to say and to speak about that and say I am angry and say I am against that and I am against treating people by their color and whatever. So, well, I really don't know what's happening down there. And,
mm-hmm.
and the sad thing is when I was in Mali, all were my friends. And saying that my house was burned, I don't see the relation with what's happening to us. Because I had to say it. If you don't clarify these sort of things, then it will repeat and repeat again. And this is my opinion on these kind of things. Because if you do not give justice, minimum of justice to people, then it wouldn't work.
Uh-huh.
Because it becomes an habit for people to do bad things. And they can explain it, okay? They can always explain and say, okay, this person is so and so, but it doesn't give them right to beat them or to kill them or to do whatever bad it is. It's for justice to decide what to do.
I'm sorry, we lost the last part of that.
I said it's people cannot do justice for themselves. If someone has done something, it has to be known what he has done, and it has to be taken over by the justice. we have to do it in that way. This is a clear and democratic way. But when things are done in the way we see now, for example, our house was burning, we had to flee away. We had not any assistance from the government. And when you talk about it, people will say, okay, this is people against Mali. And but no, you have to say. But if you don't say it, the people who are doing this kind of thing will repeat it again. Whenever they have the opportunity to do it, they will do it again.
And the work that you're doing, you're trying to prevent that from happening.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because when I was in my country, because I was in the government, I was with the UN. Then finally, when I see the poverty, the level of poverty in the country, I had to do, okay, these last years, remaining last year, I had to dedicate myself to assist people how possible I can. And this is why I did this work. And of course, it was very useful, and I was very happy to do it, because I see people changing from poverty to recognition, social recognition, and also gaining their money by their own. And I think this is one of the most important things that can happen to a woman being in this world. It's very important.
Thank you so much for doing that work. I think you do make a difference in the world.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yes. So,
I hope to see you one day.
I hope so, yes. Zakiatu Walet Halatini.
Thank you very much.
Yes. All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Zakiatu Walet Halatine's daughter, Sada Walet Ibrahim, arranged for me to connect with her mother and to conduct this interview. To learn more about Dr. Halatine's work and the matter of her status as a traveler, visit VirginiaFriendsOfMali.org. That's VAFriendsOfMali.org. This episode of Lightly on the Ground Radio was recorded at WRIR and produced at Epic Gardens. The theme music is Bonefire Dance by Rattlemouth. Thank you for listening.